This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, rain is a gun. Fast to freedom,
stars tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate, Rewind and Rewatch, episode 30, covering CZW / DGUSA Heat from the German-American Society Clubhouse in Hollywood, Florida on March 29th, 2012. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or on the dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can find us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, no obligation whatsoever, but it would be appreciated. Click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to Red Circle, where you can do a one-time or reoccurring donation. And thank you to our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears. Join alongside Case Lowe. And Case, this is an interesting time period in both Dragon Gate USA and in Dragon Gate. And I have to say, like, it was hard for me to get out this EZW portion of DGUSA Heat without, like, breaking in the intro there. That was really hard for me. How are you feeling? And what are your thoughts about how Dragon Gate USA's fortunes have changed over, like, the last, like, 4 months of the promotion?
It's weird to think that had we gone fully psychotic with this project, we would have watched Evolve 10 last week, and we would have tracked down the CZW portion of this card as well. And I think that would have decayed our mental health to an extent that the rest of this project would have taken on a drastic, drastic turn. But yeah, we're definitely in a new era of the promotion, and I think that is evident really up and down this card. And it's crazy to think that 2 years ago, you're looking at Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate USA suing each other over what talent they can use in the city of Phoenix and when they're doing this, and are they running head-to-head, this and that. And now it seems like Dragon Gate USA is just not on the level of Ring of Honor. We talked extensively last year about how Sinclair came in, and you've got kind of this three-headed dragon atop the card with Davey Richards, Eddie Edwards, and Roderick Strong in ROH, plus Kevin Steen is now back to being a full-time roster member, and you have the undercard guys of your Adam Coles and your Kyle O'Reillys. And Dragon Gate USA has become this really scrappy underdog promotion, and while I don't think the quality has dipped that drastically, I mean, we just rattled off from Indianapolis through New York City at BB King's, the last six shows of 2011, I really liked for the most part, and we talked last week about how Open the Golden Gate might be the best show in the history of the company, and yet the tone of this promotion feels dire right now.
Yeah, and I think there's no better point of comparison. Then we closed out 2011 with mentioning Chikara's High Noon, which was at the time the highest selling indie pay-per-view, of all time, at least through like 2011. So even a former partner of Dragon Gate USA at the time was somewhat ascendant. And then you look at Dragon Gate USA where they were with them for a long time, and now there's no mention of it. When I was doing research, I don't include this into our research. Chikara right now is at a point where they were doing stuff with Ring of Honor. So that's like the idea of the whole landscape. And we're going to get more into the overall wrestling notes or the overall wrestling news notes next week, because there is a lot of stuff going on that I think kind of like we like to weave this into kind of like telling the story of the promotion. You have to talk about certain other things, and other things are afoot. But while all that's happening, We have DGUSA that's still trucking, I would say. I mean, this would be their equivalent of their Open of the Southern Gate show from 2011. And it does, like, when you even, like, compare those between those two shows, it does feel, like, distinctly different, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's a lot of demarcation points you can make from last year in Atlanta for WrestleMania weekend to this year in Miami for WrestleMania weekend. And as we go along with talking about Heat this week, Open the Ultimate Gate 2012 next week, and Mercury Rising 2012 the week after that, I think you will see a lot of the groundwork set in place for what would happen for the rest of the decade, specifically in the spring of 2012. I was blown away at just how much news and notes there were from this time period. And just given when we're doing this project, you know, it's not, there's not a ton of 2010s exploring and revisiting this stuff yet, just because it's been a little too recent. I know PW Torch is doing something with NXT from the beginning, but I feel like we've chartered into some unventured territory here, and I think the notes coming up this week and the following weeks will be like, oh my god, like, it's happening. Like, we saw 2 years ago the fault line drawn in the indie wrestling war that was active until Evolve folded at the start of the year between Ring of Honor talent and WWE live talent, and now I think we see the dominoes in the rest of the wrestling world falling into place. And Mike, a lot of that relevance happens in Japan with Dragon Gate at the early portions of 2012. Are you ready to get into the timeline this week, Mike Spears?
I am ready. We are getting to some of the big boilerplate stuff, at least with how Dragon Gate is today, starts from early 2012. So let's start talking about these shows.
Yes, we've got a few cards to break down here. We're going to start with the Fukuoka Hakata Star Lane show on February 5th, 2012. Last week, we talked about how Shima was kicked out of Blood Warriors and how he introduced the Shima Royale concept. The first winner of that was Jimmy Susumu, and we saw his title challenge on the 5th of February when he lost to Shima, Shima's first defense of the Open the Dream Gate title in the main event. After the show, and these notes come from iHeartDG.com, Shima gave a long speech to close the show. He praised Susumu for the tough fight. He then reiterated that Shima and the Dreamgate title are the apex of Dragon Gate. They shook hands and Susumu thanked him and said that next time they would meet, he would become the apex. Shima then asked the Hakata fans what they thought of their first event of 2012 and invited them to come to ringside. He said now that he was out of Blood Warriors, his only allies were Don Fuji and Stalker Ichikawa, and he asked Fuji to lend him his great power and for Stalker to push himself to his limits. And then the real meat of this here, and I think it will pertain to Dragon Gate USA a little bit as we go along, but it's also just something that we've talked about on our weekly update shows a lot, and I thought this note was very interesting, where iHeartDG writes, Shima then called out Kotoka, Eita, and an unnamed trainee to the ring. He slapped Eita and said he expected him to become a show stealer. He told Kotoka that although he was senior to Eita, in his own eyes, they are looked at as equals, and he said nothing of consequence to the unnamed trainee. So, Mike, there's a lot of things happening here. I think a lot of it sets in motion the upcoming Cork and Hall show, but real quick, the Shima-Eita relationship has been awkward for longer than we realized.
And it's something that it's like a back and forth thing that now like has gone on pretty much since Eita Kobayashi started the promotion. And even like the Kotoka relationship. I mean, Shima and Kotoka kind of have been at odds for a really long time as well. Do you remember who that rookie is? Was that the current UT with them that they were talking about there? Or was it someone else that maybe fell through the cracks?
So the trainee was referred to as Kaga-kun. Is that UT? I don't know UT's real name.
I do. Let me do one quick search to make sure. I do not think. No, that's not UT. That's not UT. And it would not be wrestlers that would come like Ryotsu Shimizu or either Takahiro Yamamura or Kaito Ishida. Interesting. Interesting. That's something that I'm going to have to ask about in the future. But no, I can say that that's not UT.
Well, that is good to know as we move to the February 9th Cork and Hall show, headlined by a losing unit disbands Yoshida-style 14-man tag team elimination match. But before we get to that, The show opened with a 3-on-2 handicap match with Genki Horiguchi and Ryo Saito, defeating the aforementioned Eita Kobayashi, Kotoka, and Yosuke Watanabe. Chihiro Tamanaga defeated Super Shenlong. They were doing an undercard program at the time. Jimmy Kagetora defeated Gamma. Kness, Kenichiro Rai, and Super Shisa. That is a dream team right there. They defeated Shima, Don Fuji, and Stalker Ichikawa. And then your main event, that elimination tag team match, it lasted 71 minutes and 53 seconds. And when it was all said and done, in the middle of the ring, Akira Tozawa pinned Masaki Mochizuki, ending Junction 3 as we knew it. Mike, this is a historically great match.
It's a historically great match, and it's something about this match. So the first elimination happens nearly immediately. Then for the better parts, 3/4 of an hour, there's no eliminations. Like, it's just back and forth, back and forth. The longest cut I have seen of this, I think, is 55 minutes. Like there is not the full 71 minutes of it. Like, the, and the version that was shown on Infinity initially was incredibly chopped up. But it's one of those...
Yeah, it's an hour-long Infinity, and the entire Infinity is that match, but we're still missing 20 to 25 minutes.
Yes, yes, and it's something where, like, the big thing about this entire thing was the idea that this was the total warfare, like, this is a total conclusion, and really, they deal, it's interesting, like, looking at how, like, they do the eliminations, it was Imposter Naoki first out, and then it was Shingo Takagi, and everyone else sticks around for so long, like, Kong is the person who has the it has actually it's Susumu has the most eliminations. Susumu had 3 eliminations. He eliminates 2/3 of team Doidarts, and then Kong eliminates both Shingo and Swan. But it's something where it gets so fast and furious, and then you have like the final moments of the match, and then the aftermath, and it's just one of those things that everything really splits here, and it sets up the unit warfare that pretty much only concluded last December. And just I'm trying to think from the show. So you mentioned the semi-main event. That was, they were already windows at that time, Kness, Arai, and Shisa. Am I correct?
If they weren't officially dubbed that, it was coming, within the next few shows or the next few months.
That's what I figured. But yeah, no, this is a landmark match. It's something that, one of the big holy grails for me, well, I have two. One is I want the best of Tomohiro Ishii and Toriumon, which is mainly going to be him versus Stalker Ichikawa in 2000-2001. But my other one is getting the entire version of this match. I would love to see what all they cut from it and seeing how they kind of really treated this inner portion. Because like the Infinity Cut, if I'm right, like it's about 40 minutes of the match, and it's pretty much, it has the Imposter Naoki elimination, and then it picks up like at minute 30, if I'm right.
You are scarily accurate, because I rewatched this match this week. I would have had no off the top of the head knowledge of that like you did until I rewatched it this past week.
No, you want to hear something really gross and please, how broken my brain is? I have not seen this match in 6 years, and I know that.
That is my... there has to be counseling for whatever it is that you just pulled out of your brain. I will say, this is on the top of the list of the Dragon Gate Holy Grails, along with the Shingo versus Super Shisa singles match from May 29th, 2016, a show in Hokkaido that was taped and aired, but it was a triple shot weekend, so they only showed the King of Gate matches, and then I think one random main event tag match, and we lost out on Shingo versus another OG Toriumon guy, and it breaks my heart to this day that that match has not seen the light of day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Especially that, oh gosh. Super Shisa, for any young wrestlers who are listening to this and you haven't watched any, seek out as much Super Shisa as you can, because everything he does is so rad.
So after the match, we get the end of Junction 3. Shima, Don Fuji, and Stalker Ichikawa come out, and Shima trades words with Akira Tozawa on the microphone. At that point, Cyber Kong laughed at the idea of Shima trying to set up a match because he had no interest in facing Don Fuji or Stalker Ichikawa, and Shima said that while they would always team together, he had some other partners in mind. He said that being in the wrestling business for 15 years has given him a lot of personal connections, and he's calling on two of them now. And this brought out the owner of K-Dojo, Taka Michinoku, and the DDT boss, Sanshiro Takagi. And in a moment of pure bliss, Akira Tozawa then asked Shima, why didn't he just get out President Okamura to complete the trio of incompetent company presidents? I will leave that there. And then Taka Michinoku took the microphone, he introduced himself as the incompetent president of K-Dojo, and then identified Tozawa as Katsuo of Tozawa Joku. Takagi introduced himself and corrected Taka, saying that it was actually Katsuo of the Metabolic Brothers. And with all of that in mind, the match was set for the March 1st Korakuen Hall show, Shima, Taka, and Takagi versus Tozawa, Cyber Kong, and BB Hulk.
I feel like we've talked about this before, but Shima and Taka Michinoku have a very peculiar and interesting long-term relationship. And whenever Taka shows up in Dragon Gate, it's always a thing where it's like, are they being friendly right now or do they hate each other? We can't ever really tell.
There's literally, I mean, we would be the people to do it. Maybe when that, you know, that coveted Open the Voice Gate Patreon gets launched, the Shima Taka Michinoku relationship is so lengthy and confusing that it probably deserves its own series, because there's a lot there that I don't think people entirely realize just how much history those two have had with one another.
Yeah, there's a lot of meat on that bone. Sanshiro Takagi has always had kind of an off and on relationship with Dragon Gate, dating back to the dramatic Dream Gate shows and the infamous Dino and Tozawa match. So interesting that they would bring up that versus other things.
And with that, we go from the February Korakuen show to the March 1st Korakuen show. Not a ton happened on the normal TV dates at the end of February. I want to jump ahead to March 1st Korakuen Hall, in which we saw Genki Horiguchi, Ryo Saito, and Yasushi Kanda, all men unaffiliated at this point. They defeated Gamma, Jimmy Kagatora, and Rich Swann in the opener. Eita Kobayashi and Jimmy Susumu defeated Super Shenlong and Super Shisa. KZ and Naruki Doi, at this point still representing Blood Warriors, defeated Kness and Kenichiro Arai. Dragon Ken and Pac defeated Masato Yoshino and Ricochet in a match that I would desperately like to track down. Your semi-main was Don Fuji and Masaki Mochizuki defeating Shingo Takagi and Yamato. And then the main event, which we just previewed a minute ago, before the main event, Akira Tozawa decided to abandon the Blood Warriors name. The group was renamed to Mad Blanky, the Yellow, Black, and Red Attack. As it says in the iHeartDG notes, the group has renamed to Mad Blanky. Really, it got the reaction you would expect. They have a new entrance theme, but their ring costumes remain the same for this show. And in the Mad Blanky Korakuen Hall debut, this unit that some would argue is the greatest thing Dragon Gate has ever done, this unit was the peak of the heel unit. In their Korakuen Hall debut, they lost in 20 minutes to Shima, Sanshiro Takagi, and Taka Michinoku. And then after the match, before I toss it to Mike, it was noted that Naruki Doi hesitated on some interference spots at key points in the main event, leading directly to the loss. Tozawa was enraged afterwards, and he said that in line with making things a fresh start with Mad Blanky, Naruki Doi's services were no longer needed. They kicked him out of the group, but during the assault, Dr. Muscle came out to make the save with a Torbellino.
Yeah, so one thing that we should have brought up in the lead up here, when Tozawa really, I mean, Hulk kind of was the silent partner in this, but when Tozawa did the mutiny against Shima, the big thing was he was saying that all the old guys in the unit were fucking up. And specifically, he was going after Maruha Isapa, and it was one of those things in that unit Loser Must Abandon Total Climax match that he immediately after the match expelled Maruha Isapa. So it's something that, like, they were, and Kanda was kind of on the way out as well, so it was not, like, this huge heel unit. They were already consolidating, eliminating people at the time. But the main event here, Case, it sucks. This is not a good main event whatsoever.
So I have never seen the main event to this match. I no longer have access to the file that I once had for this show, but the version of the show I had was everything but the main event. And I don't know why that was, but it's a show that I haven't seen in years. But on top of that, I've never even seen this main event, but anytime Takagi is wrestling and then you have that awkward Shima Taka tension, this match doesn't exactly sound good.
And it's something that with Mad Blanky, everyone has warm memories of Mad Blanky, but they don't have warm memories of 2012 through 2013 Tozawa-led Mad Blanky. And this is kind of the start of it. Like, it is a very complicated thing. It is something that I would love to one day sit down with all the parties and go like, all right, let's talk about 2012. Because there's a lot of moving parts here, and there's a lot of things that seems like that that momentum was built and then immediately kind of get them taken out the ankles there. And Mad Blanky, I mean, you like look at Mad Blanky, your top three at this time, at least natively, were Tozawa, Hulk, and Kong. That's even with the ascent of Akira Tozawa, like, it's not a strong unit. And then you had the three bumbling presidents beat them. And then all the while, you have, like, all these other things. And then, most importantly, we have Dr. Muscle coming out for the save for Naruki Doi. And that would be solved very, very quickly. It should be noted that the big thing about Mad Blanky as we get into Heat was everyone was like, oh, Mad Blanky's here, Mad Blanky's here. What's Mad Blanky meaning? And Tozawa, in English and in Japanese, whenever someone asked him, he said it was bullshit. And everything else was bullshit, too.
Yes, Akira Tozawa, not only a beautiful singer, but a beautiful poet. And like Mike mentioned, the Dr. Muscle situation would get sorted out very quickly because the March 2012 of Dragon Gate was loaded with not only that Cork and Hall show, but they went to Osaka Bodymaker Coliseum number 2 on March 3rd and March 4th for the Champion Gate shows. I'm going to read the full card for this first night because this card looks unbelievable in hindsight. It opens with Shingo and Yamato versus Masato Yoshino and Super Shisa. We go from there to Akira Tozawa versus Chihiro Tamanaga, which Tozawa obviously won. Shima and Dragon Kid defeated Pac and Rich Swan. Jimmy Kagetora and Jimmy Susumu defeated BB Hulk and Cyber Kong in your two title matches on this show. Ricochet defeats Naruki Doi to retain the Open the Brave Gate title. And Genki Horiguchi, Ryo Saito, and Yasushi Kanda defeat Don Fuji, Gamma, and Masaki Mochizuki for the vacant Open the Twin Gate titles. After the show, there's a ton of post-match angles. It would take me a long time to get through all of it. So the simple fact is that after this show, Masato Yoshino, Naruki Doi, Ricochet, Rich Swan, and Pac decided to form a unit. They had no official name, but they had decided to link forces. And Ryo Saito and Genki Horiguchi were offered spots to join the Jimmies by Susumu and Kagetora, and they accepted with the condition that Yasushi, now Jimmy Kanda, could join as well.
Yeah, so things were really escalating real quickly. I was going to be seeing how great my brain was because I was like, okay, so let me guess what happened here because I don't have the full notes that you had from the out of ring stuff there. But that was exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, CK1 versus Pac and Swan. I remember that being a lot of fun. And
oh my
this is
god,
the launch.
Mike, that match sounds so good. I mean, there's so much Rich Swan stuff within this time period that I would love to go back and rewatch because my theory on Swan was before he got signed by WWE, I was like, this is like, he's not having the match of the year contenders, but this is like a top 10 guy in the world. I mean, he's really unbelievable. And I think if we went back and rewatched a lot of his Japan work in the same way that Pac has been such a revelation, Dragon Gate USA, a guy that we always love, but now he's even better than we remember. I think we would have a similar thought about Rich Swan and his work in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something where when Swan had something to do in Dragon Gate, he always excelled. But it was also that they, because of Swan things, sometimes we had, sometimes, and Swan's talked about it, sometimes Dragon Gate didn't treat Rich Swan always the best.
No.
So, and it's something also worth going on before we get into night two. This is the launch of Champion Gate after what happened with 311 2011 and Fukushima and the tsunami. They basically moved their bigger event that they originally were having in Sumo Hall to a double shot at Bodymaker 2, now known as Ideon Toon Arena, Osaka. Just so people understand on the timeline.
Yeah, it was a formation of kind of how we know the calendar now, and we would start to see the Big Five being implemented sooner rather than later. But we do get the second Champion Gate show on March 4th. The top two matches are the things that really matter here, with the Open the Twin Gate match with Jimmy Kagetora and Jimmy Susumu defeating Mad Blanky of Akira Tozawa and BB Hulk for those titles. I know there are some people, and I believe it is our loyal Twitter follower at Angry216. I think this is one of his favorite Dragon Gate matches of all time. There are people that have this match as like an upper echelon Twin Gate match. It's been years since I've seen it, but I do know that the main event, the Open the Dream Gate title match, where Shima retained the belt over Pac, is one of my all-time favorite Shima matches, Pac matches, Dreamgate defenses, and Dragon Gate matches as a whole.
Yeah, this, like, for as interesting as Night 1 was, Night 2 is pretty much, after you get out of, like, the Shenlong tag, you have a lot of interesting stuff there. We're already seeing, like, the roots of Akatsuki with Chihiro Tomonaga, Shingo Takagi, and Yamato teaming. Ada Kobayashi's on the other side with two people of what soon will be called World 1 International, Yoshino and Ricochet versus Horiguchi and Kanda. And this is probably, like, after Kanda's, like, return and, like, kind of did, like, his big heel thing, it was a big thing that Kanda was a face now at the time because he was such a long-term heel. He was the original heel in a lot of ways. So it's a really cool time. It's a really cool card. And the two title matches are both stellar as well. And, I mean, when they started the Champion Gate concept, it is basically the exact same thing as we have now, and it's one of my favorite like set of shows they have every year, just because they always do interesting things, and people and the wrestlers, they put forth a lot of effort even on the undercard if you're not in the title matches at Champion Gate, and there's a lot of good stuff there.
After the main event, which again, I highly recommend you go out and find on the internet somewhere if you have not seen it, the translation from iHeartDG reads, Shima gave his customary long speech at the end. He talked about meeting Pac 5 years ago and the progress and growth that he has shown since then. He praised him for the fight today and said he wasn't sure if he could beat him again. Still, today was a win. He talked about Ricochet joining up with the Doi-Yoshi unit. He said it would be a bit odd for them to continue teaming because of this, so they were going to have to part ways here. They shared a hug. He called Ricochet, Pac, and Rich Swann the three jewels of Dragon Gate USA. He said with Third Group leading the international charge, Tozawa leading his group of evil punks, and the Jimmies doing... Well, he wasn't exactly sure what the Jimmies were all about, but still, it was time for the reborn veteran army to attack. He mentioned the Triangle Gate challenge that Dragon Kid made the night before. Along with Mochizuki, they were once again making it. They were added to the title match in Wakayama, making it the first three-way six-man tag since 2010. And before we break down that Memorial Gate show, Mike, your thoughts on Shima calling Pac, Ricochet, and Swann rather than perhaps Pac, Ricochet, and Gargano, the three jewels of Dragon Gate USA?
Well, we'll probably get into this more when we get past WrestleMania weekend, but Swann, because he spent so much time there and had such great crowd engagement, was thought much more highly by native fans than Gargano when Gargano would show up. Because Gargano will show up again soon and UK and Japan, as will Air Fox, and that's always that was a trip that well intentioned was never going to work out.
That is a fun tour to look back on. We will discuss that in depth when we get to the Gargano Air Fox Japan tour of 2012.
But yeah, no, it makes total sense, and this is also something that I would say that they probably, within after we get through this week and we talk about what happens with UHA Nation would be the fourth jewel, I would say. And you see, I said this a couple of months back. This is the trade here. This is, you put the money down there. They're to share. Their version to share is all the money case. And now they're reaping the benefits of that. And Shima recognized that. And then when you look at like how they have stuff and how they're building up things, and especially in this Wakayama card, which is like, up until they actually truly began running Wakayama full force, this was a stacked Wakayama card, especially considering who they brought in there as well.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. This is the last Dragon Gate Japan card that we'll discuss today. Then we'll go into some brief Dragon Gate USA Newswire notes and then break down Heat 2012. But this Memorial Gate and Wakayama show happened on March 25th, 2012. It opened with Chihiro Tomonaga, Eita Kobayashi, and Yosuke Watanabe defeating Kotoka, Shisa Boy, and Super Shisa. There was a 10-match Series Thunder Fireside match where Tsushi Onida defeated Stalker Ichikawa in 8 minutes and 37 seconds. With all due respect to Stalker Ichikawa, I can't imagine sitting through that match. Match 3 was Mandai Ryu and the fake Naoki Tanizaki defeating Don Fuji and Gamma. And then we had match 4, and before match 4, there was an angle as the Doi Yoshi unit announced their name before their match. It is World 1 International. The name is a combination of the prior unit and their new concept and members. Doi was pleased with the name since Pac is British, Swan and Ricochet are American, and Yoshino was from Thailand. And Yoshino yelled at him and assured everyone that he was Japanese and then quickly changed the subject. And then we got our match here, which was Pac and Rich Swann defeating Masato Yoshino and Naruki Doi in their first true tag team match in about a year and a half. Open the Brave Gate title match, Ricochet defeated KZ to retain the belt. Open the Twin Gate match, Kagetora and Susumu defended against Shingo and Yamato. In the main event, that 9-man, 3-way Triangle Gate match with the Jimmies, Genki Horiguchi, Jimmy Konda, and Ryo Jimmy Saito defeating Akira Tozawa, BB Hulk, and Cyber Kong, and Shima, Dragon Kid, and Masaki Mochizuki.
So one thing that is kind of lost here, and I didn't realize this was already happening, Mandai Ryu, this is the former Super Saiyan Long 2, Ape Kamada. He basically, over the, like, the last like year and a half of it, he does like this long 50-match trial series where he's like progressively going more insane, and he starts like ripping off his mask and wearing a clear mask, and then he's rebranded as Mandai Ryu. He's the saltiest wrestler. He is the problem dragon. It was kind of a joke that, and he was brought in immediately to be the fall post into Mad Blanky, and this was his debut match as Mandai Ryu.
Yes, I knew you would be able to describe that better than I could, because I'm... 2012 is an interesting point in Dragon Gate, and I think you can speak to this a little bit, where there is a real lack of footage for right. a lot of 2012. It's I talked like 2009, 2010, there's a lot of stuff out there. It's just not my favorite years in Dragon Gate. 2011, I was, you know, rewatching as we went along. 2012, there's just stuff that I just have never seen pop up anywhere. So I was going through the iHeartDG archives, and it was very confusing following mm-hmm. what would become the Mandai Ryu story, but I knew if I mentioned his name, Encyclopedia Mike would have the answer that I was hoping for, and sure enough, that's exactly what happened.
Well, this was after... So 2012 wasn't just like a down period in content for Dragon Gate Western-wise. It was just down, like, a lot of stuff that was making tape in Japan was not making it to the States unless you're ordering it from tape traders. So that's why a lot of it's not out there. So that's why it was happening. Like, and it was one of those things that, like, I think MediaFire was like the big trading thing where you all would download the MediaFire files and you hope that it would work for a long time. And then everything kind of went with this. And then there was some like weird, like people who would rip stuff, like big, like arguments. And then they were trying to monetize their rippings. It was a big mess in 2012. But yeah, no, it's a complicated time. And not a lot of this stuff ended up making tape. I want to say I remember the Takayama versus Jimmy's match, but I do not remember the KZ and Ricochet match at all.
Yeah, this is another era of KZ. I wish Ricochet was doing literally anything else with his career so we could see a KZ versus Ricochet 2020 match, but that will not happen. So that is what is going on in Japan. The long story short, Mad Blanky has formed, the Jimmies have formed, World 1 International is there, and we also have the return of the veteran army. And that leads us into the Dragon Gate USA Newswire. There's just a few notes to talk about. Coming on February 24th, when Gabe Sapolsky announced the huge main event has been signed for Dragon Gate USA's event in Hollywood, Florida on March 29th. It will be the three-way elimination match, as Gabe writes, and I will read Gabe verbatim, it will be a three-way elimination match with trios. This explosive bout has Ronin of Johnny Gargano, Chuck Taylor, and Rich Swann versus what he referred to as Blood Warriors, what would later become Mad Blanky of Tozawa Hulk and Uha Nation versus the DUF of Sami Callihan, Eric Cannon, and Pinky Sanchez. So real quick, Mike, you know, we've talked a little bit about how this company has morphed and is becoming Evolve Light. That is something that I think is very present on this show. But we do have, after the No Rope match in November, another implementation of a landmark key feature Dragon Gate style attraction coming to America.
And arguably, I don't think it's arguably, why did I say that? it is by far like the more important Dragon Gate Dragon System style match. The three-way and four-way trios matches are such a huge thing. And the fact that it was coming here, and I actually had like the thing of like, I knew this was happening, but where I lived in Miami and where I worked in Miami, for me to make it to the show was near impossible. So I did not watch the show, but I was like, oh, they're doing the three-way elimination match. This is like one of the biggest things possible. And it's something like, we'll see how the no ropes matches change in Dragon Gate USA. But this was something that like he goes back to, and when we get to 2014, he goes back to in a very weird way, but it's something that, you know, the fact that they did this, and I wonder if it was something that he saw like the cards that are being posted on iHeartDG, and he was like, oh, three-way elimination tag, that sounds great. Because I don't believe Gabe was someone, especially like the, like he was clued in on some stuff and he's talked about that in the past. I don't know if he truly was clued in on how big of a thing that the three-way elimination match is. Like, because if he did, this would not be happening in Hollywood, Florida.
Yeah, this show was also not an iPay-per-view. We'll talk at length next week about some of the iPay-per-view marketing that was going on this weekend and the competition in that marketplace, but Heat was a DVD-only show, similar to, again, Open the Southern Gate last year, or Chasing the Dragon from Indianapolis in September that we talked about just a few weeks ago. We also have on February 24th, and this will become a topic as we get more into the Evolve Light portion of the show, that Bobby Fish is finally coming to Dragon Gate USA. Fish will make his DGUSA debut on this show in Hollywood, Florida. And it's notable because he is, with the exception of maybe Callahan and for a time Moxley and then Gargano and Taylor, Bobby Fish is one of the real standout stars in Evolve, but obviously has a style that is a bit contradictory towards the Dragon Gate style. But now that it is all one universe, we see the debut of Bobby Fish. And then our final note is on March 26th, Dragon Gate USA is looking for the 2012 breakout star, and there will be three breakout chance matches in Hollywood, Florida. It seems like every show now, or at least every weekend, we have some sort of breakout challenge gimmick, but this one will see the scene of Caleb Konley and Scott Reed wrestle Shima and Masaki Mochizuki. It will see Ricochet against Florida's top prospect Mike Cruz, and we will be talking a lot about Mike Cruz on this show. And then we will also see Masato Yoshino against a mysterious luchador who was signed to a Dragon Gate USA contract, but the name was not announced until his match. And I've also got plenty of notes on that wrestler when we get to that match. And Mike, with all of that in mind, I'm ready to talk about Heat 2012.
All right, let's get into it. Heat 2012 opens with a shot of the German American Society Clubhouse in Hollywood, Florida. I have some history of Hollywood, Florida, but that's neither here nor there.
Real quick, what did you think about this venue?
It really reminded me of the venue they ran in Boston, that Police Athletics League place, in a way.
Yeah, well, yeah, similar setup with the balcony there. It is a really small room. I mean, you know, there were only a few rows of chairs available, and it seemed like all of them were filled, but you really couldn't get a lot of bodies in that room. It will be interesting to see, like, next year you get the two Dragon Gate USA shows and the Evolve show on WrestleMania weekend. It seemed like this is a building that an Evolve show would get over in, a more, politely calling it an intimate atmosphere, which is code for really small building, but on camera, I didn't mind. I kind of liked the atmosphere that this building brought to the table.
You like seeing the German crests on the wall. You like seeing the hardwood finishings.
Let's relax here a little bit.
and then the hard cam that had just like their setup that they would use the next night, which somehow they managed to shove into this room.
Well, okay, yes. Well, once again, if Gabe Sapolsky had paid Mike Spears and I to run camera and, I don't know, maybe make his company look presentable for once in his life, we could have, I'm just saying, we could have done some damage in this room, okay? We could have made this place look high class, but they threw a hard cam up on the wall and said, all right, let's have some wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, and it's something that, you know, maybe and when we get into talking about the venue, because I know that both myself and our guest for next week have thoughts on the venue that they ran in Miami Beach, the Deauville Hotel and Resort. It's very like interesting, and it's really fitting the fact that this is co-branded of CZW, because it felt a lot more like a CZW or Evolve venue the way you're describing than it did a DGUSA venue. But times are changing, and they're changing quick.
Yeah, real quick, just before we break down the opening match, Mike and I did not watch the CZW portion of this card. It was unavailable on the version of the show we have, but there were two death matches that headlined and main evented this show, with Danny Havoc defeating Lucky 13 and DJ Hyde defeating hashtag Save the Children Drake Younger. And it is notable because Kevin Steen of Ring of Honor fame was on commentary with Lenny Leonard for those matches.
I'm kind of sad to not have him on commentary here, but it makes sense. I would have wondered what his thoughts were about the scene. I feel like that he probably would have some takes there. So yeah, let's get into the show itself. Starts off with Low-Key versus Bobby Fish. Low-Key wins with a Key Crusher in 8 minutes and 32 seconds. What were your thoughts on this? Because this entire show had like a distinct sheen to me that really started on this first match. But I wanted to see if our thoughts line up first. What were your thoughts about this match?
Look, this is not the Dragon Gate USA that I know. This represents such a drastic shift in the tone of the company. And I'm someone that came on here last week and talked about how Low-Key versus BB Hulk was, in essence, kind of the true-to-form Evolve match that even Evolve got away from. And Low-Key versus Bobby Fish was just a lesser version of that. But even just the minor switch of having Bobby Fish in for BB Hulk, you all of a sudden go, oh my god, like, this is not Dragon Gate USA. This is something else. And for as much as I like Low-Key, for as high as I still am on him, and, you know, Bobby Fish was not the Bobby Fish that we would come to know and love, but he was a nice little wrestler at this point. I was so disturbed by the optics of this match, of this standing, striking, almost battle arts tribute match, more so than a Dragon Gate USA match, that I was disappointed by it. I didn't like having this on the show, because it's just not, like, you see the red canvas, you're buying a Dragon Gate USA ticket. This is not the kind of match that I want to watch. It was kind of a bummer to start the show this way.
Yeah, and what I've talked about in the past, my dissatisfaction with certain things coming in here, this is like one of them. Like, this match was like a 2¾ stars match. It was interesting when they were striking, and then they started grappling, and it lost me, and they never got me back with it. But it's something that I was like, all right, like, sitting down and watching this, maybe we'll get Sheriff Low-Key again. You know how I feel about Sheriff Low-Key. He's here to be the greatest. Like you say, I'm the encyclopedia. Low-Key's the one out here who in Los Angeles was bringing up pro wrestling war and battle arts with Masaaki Mochizuki here. So it just, like, it's this show distinctly was not a DGUSA show. It was, if they would have called this Evolve with Dragon Gate talent, I felt like that would have been a more accurate representation of what the show ended up being, to be honest.
Oh god, yeah.
And it's not even like how we said that with Open the Golden Gate, that was like very much like a Road to show that was awesome. This is not like a Road to show. Like, this was not really building up to some things that were going to happen later the week in Miami. Some things will be changed because of this show, but, you know, I mean, Bobby Fish at this time was fine. I mean, Low-Key was probably a little happy to wrestle someone who he wrestled with in Japan, and he knew had a legit background, so Low-Key might have respected him. He might have been like, Bobby Fish, I understand that you are currently 1-0 in kickboxing, and you won this one match by knockout. That is interesting. I think of myself as a great striker as well.
Do you just because that reminded me, and this is something we can cover on a later episode as well, but do you know the story of when Low-Key wrestled Jigsaw?
Oh, he hated it.
Yeah, he said that, and this was Evolve 12. It's one of the next, it might be the next Evolve event we talk about. Key wrestled Jigsaw, who, like, we've talked on this show, like, Jigsaw should have been used in Dragon Gate USA more. I can't believe he still doesn't have a contract. I think he's still so good. And Key came in and wrestled him, and backstage was going, well, he's not a legitimate striker. I can't work with him. I don't buy his offense. Oh my god, Key rules.
Yeah. It's very much like the sheriff has his opinions. He believes who is the people worth his time and who isn't. And Jigsaw was not one of those people. And that's a match that was talked about a lot afterwards.
And it's such a bummer because you think about Key's skill set, and he could have like a really interesting almost like early Toriumon style grappling, like Shima match with Jigsaw. Like, they didn't have to go in there and middle kick each other in the chest. They could have had a really interesting match, but Ki has one mode that he wants to work in, and, you know, it works against BB Hulk, it doesn't really work against Bobby Fish, and it did not work against Jigsaw.
No. And then, after the match, we went backstage with Matt Blanky with their member, UHA Nation, because UHA was not kicked out of Blood Warriors. He was pulled into Matt Blanky, and I assume it's thoroughly because he is Akira Tozawa's best friend. Like shoot, best friend. So I was happy to see the two of them there. UHA was doing a promo. Sadly, the charming UHA Nation promos have come to an end. This was basically him saying, like, Matt Blanky's here to wreck all these teams. And then he says, hey, Tozawa, what does Matt Blanky mean? And he says in English, Mad Blankly means bullshit. Everything else means bullshit. And he kind of storms off because now we are deep in like the just psychotic Akira Tozawa phase.
A great promo. Not from our man UHA Nation, but I thought Tozawa was so, so convincing and so entertaining in the way that he spoke in English here.
Yeah, I mean, Tozawa, even at the time, was pretty close to fluent in English. So it went pretty well. And then we went to the next match. This is Ricochet versus Case's main man, the number one prospect in the state of Florida, Mike Cruz. Ricochet won in 10 minutes and 10 seconds with a shooting star press.
So what do you know about Mike Cruz?
I remember him being on these shows, and that's it. Tell me, because it seems like you know more about Mike Cruz than I do.
Well, I have a very fond memory of, like, 2015, 2016. It's a little bit of, like, the dying days of tweeting, treating Twitter like a message board when it was Case Lowe and Voice of Wrestling and Dylan Hales and whoever else just lobbing these nuclear takes.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
And people just not really understanding the discourse and the power of Twitter yet. And then also some like real deep indie PWO discussions of people that had migrated from, say, a DVDVR to PWO, and Mike Cruz being a real topic of conversation. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on this. I'm not going to look it up. Mike Cruz might have had at least a nomination thread for the Pro Wrestling Only Greatest Wrestler Ever project. If he did, he didn't get any votes. He didn't get any votes. I know that. He might have had a thread, though. If he didn't have a thread there, he was at least discussed constantly in the microscope section, because Mike Cruz, had he continued working, and if you look at his cage match, it's primarily worked through 2014, a little bit in 2015, and then a few matches in 2016 and one in 2017 before he finally kind of says his farewell. Had he continued working at a regular pace in 2016, 2017, 2018, this is a guy that would be all over the Scenic City Invitational shows. He would be on the SUP shows now. Like, he would be almost the praise, and I don't know how many of our listeners were even necessarily around for this, but like the praise of the resurgence of Jimmy Rave in 2016 and 2017, Mike Cruz would have been a huge deal in that scene. And I specifically remember a lot of discourse around this time of like people being upset with Evolve and the end of Dragon Gate USA, more so the end of Evolve on those websites, and a constant complaint being, man, why didn't they book Mike Cruz more? Mike Cruz could have helped them out so much. And I looked everywhere for this. I think it's a tweet from Gabe's Twitter account, which means it got deleted years ago. But I looked everywhere on the internet, because at some point, somebody accused Gabe of not booking Mike Cruz anymore because Gabe didn't like Mike Cruz's face. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I remember Gabe specifically responding to that and it either being linked into a message board, probably Pro Wrestling Only, or maybe I just saw it on Gabe's Twitter feed. And again, since then, it you know, has been nuked probably multiple times. But him being really upset that somebody said that he stopped booking Mike Cruz because he didn't like his face, whereas I think Gabe was just saying, no, he wasn't good enough to work for me. But I remember this specific response, and I couldn't find it anywhere, and it drove me crazy. But Mike Cruz was a Florida guy who came up, I'm assuming, around the same time as John Davis, and weirdly, like, wasn't an FIP guy. He was kind of working the other spots in Florida, which is really weird to think about, because I think just, I don't know, we'll talk about the match, but I mean, I would have continued booking him after his performance against Ricochet if, you know, you don't know a ton about Mike Cruz. I know the one match of his, and this will make sense given his opponent and that circle in particular losing their minds over this match. Mike Cruz had a really popular internet match with Too Cold Scorpio in like 2011 or 2012. It's for a promotion called USA Pro. It doesn't come up on Cage Match, but if you look on YouTube, Mike Cruz versus Too Cold Scorpio, there's a few different listings of the match. I'm sure I've seen it at some point. I don't have any notes for it, though, but I know, like, that was the Mike Cruz match, and there were people deeply embedded in the indie scene, in particular, like, the offshoot sort of IWA Mid-South level indie scene that were losing their minds for that specific match. So there's a lot of Mike Cruz lore, even if he's a guy that really didn't work on a regular basis after 2014, but I will have this defining memory of Gabe at least being accused of no longer booking Mike Cruz because he didn't like his face.
You know, I watched this match and I thought that this was fine, and that tells you I was not a part of that scene of Twitter.
You know, no, you were not.
And I remain not to this point. I thought this match was fine. This was a match I feel like was hampered by the arena because they weren't, there's basically one place you could do dives, and for like Ricochet at this time, I mean, that's part of it, and it was a low ceiling place. So I mean, you got the shooting star versus any of his other moves that he would do, because usually he would go for the 630 if he was not doing the double moonsault here, but it was just a shooting star to win this match. I thought this was fine, you know. Like, nothing on this show is bad until we get into the next match.
I really like this match. Maybe I just came in excited to watch Mike Cruz, but again, if I had any sort of say in this promotion at the time, and I saw Cruz work against Ricochet here, Cruz would have at least been invited to one of the Miami shows to work. I mean, he shows up on probably the next four or five Evolve shows after this. I think he worked an Evolve show prior to this as well. So Gabe used him for at least a little bit on a low level. But I really liked him here because I think he and Ricochet meshed really well. There's a point where Ricochet is really kicking him hard, and it was just like a new era of Ricochet. And one of the few points to 2012 in Ricochet's career where we clearly had the experience edge on a guy, and Ricochet was working with that in mind, and that was really nice to see from him. And I thought Cruz held his own. I mean, they were in sync with all of their spots. He hung with Ricochet in sort of those fast-paced opening sequences that Ricochet liked to do. So I ended up going 3.5 on this match because I thought, in the essence of whatever the breakout challenge of the month is, whatever Gabe was trying to do to get new talent, quite honestly, I thought Mike Cruz delivered. And of what we would see with the next two breakout challenge matches, I would come away from this going, yeah, Mike Cruz is the guy. Like, he's the guy we need to turn our attention to. Now, things would obviously change for a few of those guys in there, and they would improve. But Mike Cruz never gets that chance to improve, and I honestly think it's a shame, because I really liked him here.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, I was more taken back by you already had him coming out to White Ghetto for Ricochet. And he has, like, the black and pink tights, which for me, for a lot of, like, even for, like, Mad Blanky and Monster Express, like, the black and pink's kind of what I identify with him, you know?
Very much so.
It does feel like the step up for Ricochet that, like, and it's weird because World 1 International was not a long tenured unit. It's just that's what's carved in my brain for him in Dragon Gate after the young, after, like, his very early stage. Like, like coming in there and the crowd losing their mind for the double moonsault because Shima made him do the double moonsault every night and probably helped lead to the degradation of his knees.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we had a lot of stuff after this. So first, Hulk and Akira came out to attack Ricochet, but Shima and Misaki Mochizuki make the save. They have broken up in Japan, but they have not broken up in America yet. They are still the United Gate champions. And then we go backstage for a DUF promo case. And it's up now we're getting into the DUF that I remembered a little bit with. It was DUF was mad at Pinky Sanchez being drunk and losing his gear. Cannon and Callahan were trying to cut a promo about Mad Blanky and Pinky is drunk. They are mad that they are not getting respect. And this was like a 2 minute long thing of like Isom trying to say a line and then Pinky Sanchez acting drunk. It was I felt like this was an incredibly annoying promo and segment.
So I was very curious as to how you were going to feel about this. I will say it went on too long. We kind of got the point that Pinky Sanchez was drunk and forgot his gear. But if you remove, say, 30 to 45 seconds of this, maybe cut it down to a 60 to 90 second promo, I gotta say, Mike, the DUF continues to deliver for me. I thought this was well done for what it was, and adds a wrinkle to Pinky Sanchez that it's the most interesting thing and the most character work that he's shown. And again, we're still at a point here where I really like the mic work of Callahan. I really like Callahan in general at this point, and Eric Cannon played his role well. So too long of a promo, we got it, and then it kept going. But on paper, I do not hate the idea of this promo.
It's the execution, really, that fails this, because it was nice having that. And especially with, like, the idea that DUF should be ascendant after the end of Freedom Fight 2011, they're finally addressing, like, we should be the top team. Like, I liked that portion of it. It just was getting too much into, like, Pinky Sanchez bullshit for me. So, I think, like, that was my issue with that, at least. Then we get into the next match. We get to discover who the mysterious luchador is, as it's Masato Yoshino versus the mysterious luchador. It would become Samurai Del Sol, now known today as, I just blanked on his name.
Kalisto.
Masato Yoshino lost this match as Samurai Del Sol won with a reversal out of the Sol Naciente. Before the match, Johnny Gargano came out and he said, "Hey, I respect you all. I'm just out here scouting." And then he sat right in front of the entranceway for the entire match. And oh boy, this was not a good debut.
Yeah, it is. It is a rough spot. I think I'll let you sort of hammer home maybe the intricacies of the match. I will say from a big picture perspective, you know, Yoshino's challenging Gargano for the Freedom Gate belt. Lenny makes a note that Yoshino's won every title in the Dragon system at this point, but the Freedom Gate title, because he was a United Gate champion and was a quadruple crown guy over in Japan. And normally, I would hate the idea of the title challenger losing the night before, especially to who at this point was a nobody in Samurai Del Sol. But at this point, Del Sol has been signed to an exclusive Dragon Gate USA contract, and I also know through talking to somebody recently that Del Sol's guarantee was more than any other American's guarantee in the history of Dragon Gate USA. He was the highest paid guy on these shows, more so than Chuck Taylor, Rich Swann, Johnny Gargano. I'm assuming Ricochet is involved in that as well. Pac, probably not. He's more closer linked to the Japan office. I know behind the scenes there was the American locker room and the Japanese locker room, and Pac would always be in the Japanese locker room. But Del Sol had the highest guarantee of anybody once he came on board. And given the rest of his booking in 2012 in both Dragon Gate USA and Evolve, just knowing what's to come, I'm okay with this result. It's one of those that I think in 2012 I would have had a huge reaction against this, but now I have hindsight and I know what the Evolve booking plans are for, say, July and August of this year, so I'm okay with the finish because I don't think Yoshino was hurt from it, and I think it helped Del Sol, but the match was a little rough.
That's a light way of putting it. Yeah, I don't have issue with the booking of it. I think the match was terrible. I felt like that. I guess I'm playing bad cop on this show. Samurai Del Sol looked like someone who trained for like 6 weeks.
This is the sloppiest I've ever seen Del Sol look. This is, probably his worst match I've ever seen. Now, granted, I haven't seen a lot of his Mexico stuff, but it's weird that he and Yoshino just didn't click at all.
Yeah, they didn't click at all. So it was just like he completely botched a bunch of moves. For someone like Masato Yoshino to visibly see this guy getting mad in the ring, like he was getting, the furthest it was going on here, he was going like, what is going on with this? So he does a botched springboard hurricanrana like out of the gate that was supposed to send Yoshino to the floor, but then he had to kind of like redo it then. And then there was another springboard dive that he completely missed, and then the crowd just like got behind him because like, hey, this guy is trying. And then he was not able to base for a Torbellino, so it looked like a weird like diagonal a flying crossbody in a way. Like that definitely was a Torbellino that he was going for. That was when Yoshino, like when he like landed, like just stared at the referee with his eyes bulged, and you could tell like, oh, Yoshino's about to lose it.
Yeah, it's weird just because I think everything we know about Yoshino is this cool, calm, collected guy, you know, takes things in stride. Yeah. It's the only time I think outside of the idea of the match structure, you know, something really annoying Yoshino. It was a different side of him just because Del Sol just could not get it together. And again, very unlike Del Sol, well, I pretty much everything else we'll talk about with him, I'm like, oh my God, this guy's amazing. Like, he's so good. Not of this match, though. I tweeted out the gif of the Bosch dive to the outside that I still just can't get over how bad that looked.
Yeah. And it's probably one of the few times I've ever seen Yoshino like lose it. Like, he is like one of the most calm customers ever. Like, nothing fazes him. One of the most respected people within the Dragon System history, if not the most respected, he's one of like the top three. And you could just tell this guy's like, I'm going through this. And you could tell why this was his last weekend in America.
Yes, that is something that we will monitor at the end of this weekend, of all of the people that suddenly disappear from this promotion. And the talent pool is not exactly filled because they didn't book Mike Cruz. That's the problem.
That's it. Post-match, Johnny Gargano said that this is awkward, but he's still looking at son Saturday. He still knows how important of a competitor that Masato Yoshino is. He still knows that'll be a big-time fight. Yoshino basically shouts out and, like, gritting through his teeth, I do not want to be insulted, and throws the mic down and leaves the ring.
I like Yoshino here. I like when he cuts promos in English in a genuine way of like, oh, he, like, even more so than the broken English promos of Shima or, you know, the fluent English of Tozawa. Like, Yoshino is kind of that broken English realm, but it always, it's just something different that I like. Like, there's a legitimacy to him speaking that I just find to be very intriguing.
Well, he's very, like, calm and collective, but he's very, like, brief with his words so they have more impact, I would say.
Very much so.
Like, you can tell that, like, he thought, I was like, I am not going to be insulted. And he had a genuine look of anger, which I would say is less at Johnny Gargano than it was at what the last 15 minutes of his life was. I'll say that for sure.
Yeah, that Del Sol Yoshino match, I mean, I went 2.5 on it because I didn't hate it as much as you. I did not hate it as much as you. And it doesn't even compete with the worst stuff we've seen in Dragon Gate USA. But in terms of, like, just a match falling apart, we haven't really seen something quite like this yet, where I think there are a lot of planned ideas and none of them are really executed.
Right, yeah. I went 1.5.
Yeah, that from your tone, Mike, from your very stern tone, that doesn't entirely surprise me.
Yeah, because I look at, like, the really, really bad stuff, like talking about Mercury Rising 2010, talking about the main event to Freedom Fight 2011, and those are different kind of things. Like, a match does not fall apart like this in Dragon Gate USA up until this point like this match did. And it's just kind of remarkable. Like, it's something where I feel like that if they would have a rematch outside of this, like, after, like, Samurai Del Sol, like, kind of settles in, it probably would have been outstanding. I could see this match being outstanding just this night in freaking Hollywood, Florida. Not even in Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood. Don't care for Hollywood, Florida, case.
Yeah, what's the scene like in Hollywood, Florida?
Okay, so I shot an MFA, or I produced, rather, an MFA thesis film for a friend in Hollywood, and it's, like, a beach town, but it's a very, like, it's a snowbird beach town, and it's with all that entails with that. You do get a lot of international travelers and people who would have like guest houses there, and it just kind of sucks. It's just kind of a sucky town. Like, it just stinks. It's one of those things that like you're far north of Miami, but you're not like in Lauderdale, Boca, like that whole area. Like it's just not a it's a place that the beach there is nice, but it's just kind of like a shitty town. Like just a, it's weird to like describe like a suburb of Miami Fort Lauderdale as like it's kind of a shitty town. And I feel like I've said that a lot, but not a Hollywood, Florida fan at all.
That is good to know. You know, I'm obviously in my senior year of college right now in the Midwest, but I keep on having this overwhelming feeling that my work will take me down south at some point. And I welcome that opportunity, quite honestly, but I will be sure to avoid Hollywood, Florida if I can.
I know a lot of cooler places that are in south of Miami, but north of Miami kind of stinks.
That's good to know.
Yeah. Case, I could see you being like a Key West guy, maybe down in Homestead, Key Largo.
Yeah, I feel like I went to St. Petersburg once, and I was like, yeah, I could do this. But no, not a fan?
Oh, St. Petersburg's fine.
Okay.
I mean, that's Tampa area. Tampa's its own kind of crazy.
Yeah, I was into Tampa when I was there.
I could see you being a Tampa person, though. Big music scene in Tampa.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Florida is, obviously, it's Florida. I think enough is said there. But if I'm going to end up there, Mike Spears, King of the Nightlife, obviously big fan of Miami. Me, I'll take Tampa. I'm the alternative guy. I'm a bit off the beaten path. I could very easily and happily wind up in Tampa, Florida.
I'll say this. I could plot out someone a 48-hour thing in Miami. It does not require you going to South Beach. That would be a lot more fun than going to South Beach. Case, have you ever heard of the Coral Castle case?
No, I have not.
All of our listeners, pause the podcast, go look up Coral Castle, because it's one of the most crazy things in the world, and it's worth going to. That is one thing. Also, a karaoke bar in Little Havana where you have like 16, 70-year-olds just like rock out to Aguanale, and those were the days. Just great times. That's my Miami. That's my South Florida.
That's my Miami. Oh, well, Mike, I gotta head down south now. Let's get this vaccine in me, and let's go to a karaoke bar near the Coral Castle.
There we go. Two guys who would not be going to a karaoke bar after the next match is the scene versus the veterans return. As we were talking about Team Veteran, this is Team Veteran Returns, their second of their three iterations. Shima, Masaki, Mochizuki defeat the scene of Caleb Conley and Scott Reed, accompanied by Amber O'Neill and Larry Dallas in 14 minutes and 59 seconds, when Shima hits a stereo meteora on both guys but gets the pin on Conley. I forgot that the Team Veteran Returns theme was like a dance house remix of episodes.
It's unreal. It is actually, great, and I'm not a big theme song guy, but I heard the Team Veteran Returns theme, and I was in my element, to say the least. It was nice to hear. And Shima hitting the stereo meteora. I've never seen him do that spot before, I don't think. I loved the finish of this match.
Shima was mad. Shima hurts his neck in this match. I did not notice where, but there is a moment in the match. I must have been taking a note, and I looked up, and Shima was pissed off.
Well, I sent Mike a message, because we don't typically talk about these shows before we review them on the air. And
We don't like to color each other's opinions.
No, because I kind of like guessing as to, you know, what DUF segment Mike is going to hate that I'm going to be a fan of. But I sent him a message. I was like, hey, I don't know if I was looking down at my phone at the wrong spot. I don't know what it was. I know Shima really hurts his neck in this match, but I didn't see where it happened. And it makes me feel a little bit better knowing that there was at least nothing obvious to you either. What jumped out to me here, just aside from angry Shima, was the chemistry between Masaki Mochizuki and Scott Reed. I am all about it. Scott Reed is someone who, I think when he debuted, we were like, okay, like, here we go. This dude knows what's up. And then maybe it's just a proxy of him teaming with Caleb Conley, who, again, we'll get to a point where I really like Caleb, but it's still not here yet. But I feel like we never really got the progression from him that I was expecting. Here, Scott Reed turned it up a level, and I thought he was great.
Yeah, and Masaki Mochizuki, who I think is one of the smartest wrestlers of all time, was like, all right, this is something for me to sink my teeth into. And it's something where, like, at this point, or if you were like to present the show to me, I would not say that this would be my favorite match of the show to this point, but they ended up having like a really fun 15-minute match. All the while, Larry Dallas is just cutting up and reacting, and Shima and Mochizuki were not a fan. Lenny Leonard, not a fan of all the shenanigans here. And it was something that, like, it's interesting, like, how much, like, they were able to get, like, the idea of Mochizuki's going to have the same fight out of everyone. But when you get, like, angry Shima can be something special.
Yeah, no, it's nice to see the veteran army still caring at this point. I mean, the fact that they could turn it up to just that level of effort that's required to be that pissed off is nice to see.
Yeah. And then in the post-match, Matt Blanky was out again. It was Hulk and Akira first. And then Ricochet came to try to make the save, because even though in Japan they are split, there's obviously the relationship here. Spike Mohicans was still together, as I said a little bit ago. But then Uha completes the beatdown. Tozawa gets the microphone and does his Mad Blanky means bullshit line. And that line is over. And it is over in front of these CZW fans in Hollywood, Florida.
I'm glad you brought this segment up, because I forgot to mention this earlier. Both Shima and Ricochet at this point are double champions between Dragon Gate Japan and Dragon Gate USA. Neither of them come out with the belts. And I don't know why that struck me as odd, but the fact that neither of them did it struck me as really odd.
I wonder if, like, because they were all based in Miami Beach, I'm wondering if the belts were just not in the loadout, you know? But they also don't always bring over the Brave Gate belt. They usually bring over the Dream Gate. So I don't remember Shima having the Dream Gate belts in Miami. I don't remember him having that belt.
Yeah, which it would be one thing if Shima and Ricochet just didn't have the Dream and the Brave Gate belts, but they're the tag team champions, and those belts are nowhere to be seen. And I know they're not teaming, but I just thought it was strange that they had nothing with them.
You know, there are a lot of times that now that I'm looking back at 2011 that you would have that Pac and Yoshino wouldn't come out with the United Gate belt, and they're still called the champion. It's interesting. I wonder what, like, the thought process is with them not coming out with the tag team belts, because this is not the first time this has happened. It's just this is one that seemed kind of obvious.
Yeah, and you would think at the end of the shows they just toss them in Gabe's pickup truck and move on with their life. I would think they would be at the venue, at least the Freedom Gate and the United Gate belts, at all times, but that doesn't seem to be the case, and I just found it to be a little strange.
Yeah, I'm interested in knowing why the United Gates would always be left in the back, because it was not just here, it would happen a lot through the remainder of the promotion. It's interesting, like that's something I'm gonna now keep an eye on.
Yeah, I'd like to see next week if Shima has his belts.
Yep. And then we get to the semi-main event of the DGUSA portion of the show. It was Pac versus Air Fox. Pac won with the Liger Bomb in 17 minutes and 37 seconds. I thought this ruled. I thought this was a solid match. This was the best match on the show, in my opinion. And, you know, it's one of those things that I wish this match would have happened in better circumstances and in like a better venue for it. But I feel like these two guys worked great together. They've always kind of, these two have had good chemistry.
Really liked it. I will say right now, before we talk about it, I like the main event just a little bit better, and I will defend that opinion when we get to it. But Pac and Fox had excellent chemistry here. This is, we see after his 2011, where he's wrestling Ricochet pretty much the entire year and leading him into the man that he would become. This is full bore Pac just being on another level than even your Ricochets or Rich Swann or AR Fox. There's a reason that Pac would be signed after this weekend, because he's just so much better than everyone else. And it's interesting to see him and Fox wrestle here, because Pac does something to AR Fox that I've still never seen anybody do quite the way Pac did it, where AR Fox goes for the low main pain, that sort of one-man Spanish fly that he does, and Pac countered it into a German suplex. Just with the snap of the fingers, he was in another position and dumped Fox on his head. That was the real highlight for me. But this is one of those matches where I think it would be very easy for this to not meet expectations, because it's two flyers, primarily babyface guys. The dynamics necessarily aren't built in for a great match, but because Pac is so good, he brought it out of AR Fox, and I ended up going 3 3/4 on this. I really, really liked it.
Yeah, 3 3/4 as well. Like that German out of low main pain into the closing stretch was exceptional. It's one of those things that it's a shame that Pac will be signed soon, and because, like, after he drops the Brave Gate belt to Ricochet, there was so much left on the play, as we've seen in Japan, talking about him getting a Dreamgate shot. We'll see how his departure road for the next 4 months in Japan is very interesting to me, because it's something that until like Adrian Neville and NXT became a thing, like he was like this stretch was like some of the best stuff of his career. Basically, like the Rick at 2011, 2012. Of course, now I think he's greatly exceeded that, but it's something that, like, I wonder if what would have been the plans and what would have been, like, the future room, because I feel like that if Pac was more able to be in the States more often, you strap him up and basically you're having matches with him and A.R. Fox, him and John Davis. That would have been an incredible match, and that's not something I would have said 2 months ago.
Well, yeah, I mean, the path... If Gabe can guarantee Pac that he'll be there for the next year, if Pac doesn't get signed, you could reasonably say, well, then, you know, let's at the anniversary show, which was in Chicago this upcoming year, we're, you know, about a month away from talking about that, let's have Pac beat Gargano for the title and let's ride our guy, you know, as much as we can, because one of the big things that's really come out to me during this project is just how important Pac has been to Dragon Gate USA. In my opinion, the MVP of the entire promotion up to this point, and we'll talk about it when we eventually, you know, 2 years from now in terms of the timeline of Dragon Gate USA, about 4 months from now in reality, when we end this promotion, it'll be really interesting to see if either a Rich Swann or a Ricochet or a Johnny Gargano can overtake the legacy of Pac, because right now I think he is number one in Dragon Gate USA. I think it is his promotion, and somebody else with more longevity is going to have to come and take that top spot from him, because he has just been a revelation. He's been unbelievably great every single time he wrestles in Dragon Gate USA. In Japan, he just had that Dreamgate shot against Shima. And I think, realistically, you could look at about a year from now, May 2013, who wins King of Gate that year? Well, it's Ricochet. And then we see another year-long build to Ricochet eventually winning the Dreamgate belt. I think if Pac stays, it's fair to say King of Gate 2013 might be his instead.
I mean, I think he might become champion before that, given the time scale.
Yeah.
It does feel, at least in my opinion, I could see how Shima would want to hold that title reign, like the 13 key reign would have ended sooner to Pac. Because it feels like, because after they run through all the Shima Royale stuff, it seems like Pac would have made a lot of sense there. And maybe it ends up that maybe, because 2012 King of Gate winner is...
It's a weird King of Gate. I can't think of who it is off the top of my head, but I can find out for you in just a second. Because it's one of those years that...
Right.
It's just like, huh, that, okay. That
is it Susumu?
2012 is it's Horiguchi. He wore the tank top all those years.
I almost said Horiguchi because I remember the tank top, but I was getting some number dyslexia there.
Right. It was Horiguchi. Yeah, no, it's a very strange King of Gate that we'll talk about in a few episodes. Very, very weird tournament.
I think that he should break out the tank top now.
That'd be great. He was wearing it. What? I mean, he was wearing it last year at times, I think. As long as the tank top fits, by all means, brother, keep on wearing it. Horiguchi-san, that'd be great. I'd love that years later, Genki Horiguchi is still living off the legacy of King of Gate 2012.
Well, I mean, at least it's more recent than living off the legacy of El Numero Uno 2004.
2003.
That's right. It was 2003. I almost said 2012 for him before, and I almost said he won it there, and I almost said Numero Uno 2003, and I'm happy you're here to correct me, because it was in my mind. I was like, no, it was later. No, yeah. So it's 8 years now. There should be something that Genki Horiguchi wins now, because it's like every 8 or 9 years. So,
well, yeah, 3 3/4 on Pac versus AR Fox. I thought this was a massive win all around. I really like this match.
Yep. My 2011 MVP continues to have the best stuff on the show, in my opinion. Then we had more promos, and that led us to the main event, the 3-way 6-man elimination match. For those who aren't familiar with this thing, it's not that every member of your team is eliminated. It is, if you lose a fall, your whole team's out. So this is arguably the bread and butter of the Dragon system. This is the biggest match that they do between units, and this time we had a nearly all American version of it, as we had Mad Blanky of Akira Tozawa, BB Hulk, and Uha Nation, Ronin of Chuck Taylor, Johnny Gargano, and Rich Swann, and DUF of Eric Cannon, Pinky Sanchez, and Sammy Callahan. I almost forgot, we did not talk about the Ronin backstage promo before the Pac and Air Fox match. Chuck Taylor just... We were seeing shades of Poppin' Dogs and Talkin' Hogs, Chuck Taylor in that promo. It is wild.
Whatever people might think, maybe there's going to be some Chuck Taylor promos that are eventually unearthed and he has to make a notes app apology. Doesn't bother me because I think Chuck Taylor's a good dude. And it's also, it's like, well, 2012, like it wasn't that long ago. But no, we are living in an entirely different stratosphere at this point. And Chuck Taylor is just letting things fly. It is unbelievable that that promo aired on a Dragon Gate USA show. Not that he said slurs or anything just horribly offensive, but just the tone of that promo was so shocking in 2020.
I almost don't want to give away what the promo is. Chuck Taylor talks about his bang list, basically.
Wish list, what he would like to accomplish.
Yes, and then he cuts like a try-hard promo and flexes his bicep and has the camera zoom in on the bicep after everyone's asking why Rich Swann is speaking Japanese. Just a truly insane thing. And everyone's slapping Johnny's back when he's still like, my back still hurts, everyone. Be nice to me. Just a wild Ronin promo. Probably one of like the most just absurd things that this promotion has. Let's get into the main event now. I had to mark that. I was like, wait, I didn't talk about that promo. It's in my notes. There we go. We talked about it. Do you have any other thoughts on that promo before we get into the main event?
No, God, I'd much rather talk about the main event.
All right. So as I mentioned, the teams, it's Matt Blanky versus Ronin versus DUF. It is a Matt Blanky sweep in 24 minutes and 22 seconds. The eliminations are BB Hulk eliminating DUF with a first flash to Pinky Sanchez, and then Tozawa winning with a captured German on Gargano. So both of the title challengers, or both sides of the Freedom Gate main event, have lost. So the big thing here is UHA Nation. They do a series of dives, and UHA Nation gets tripped in the ropes and completely tears his knee up and is pulled out about like 12 minutes into the match. And the crowd really deflates from there. And they get him back towards the end. But it's one of those moments that as soon as he landed, he's wincing. And everyone knew that it was bad. UHA Nation would be out for about until 2013. So this is it for UHA Nation for a while.
I think it's until WrestleMania weekend of 2013. I could be wrong, but I think that's...
I thought he came back a little bit before that.
Let me take a quick scroll through his cage match. It's not a lengthy cage match, but... Yeah, this injury sucked. I was so on board with this match, and Mike, just quickly to answer your question, he comes back. I forgot about this. He comes back on April 19th, 2013 in a Twin Gate match and wins the Twin Gate belts in his first match back. So he actually is gone for over a year. He doesn't return to Dragon Gate USA until the summer events of 2013. Which I have very fond memories of. So UHA's gone for over a year because of this injury.
He returns in Japan in March. So 11 months here, or 11 months.
Is it March or April?
March. His first match back is him and Hulk defeating Mochi Fuji.
Yeah, maybe I read that. Oh, I see now. I read that cage match incorrectly. I do apologize. It looks like he's back. He is back at WrestleMania weekend of the past year. I did not scroll down far enough. So UHA's gone for 11 months, and it's a real bummer because I don't know about you. I was into this match before UHA got hurt. UHA and Sammy Callahan were the stars of this match. They were throwing bombs at one another, and it was just a side of UHA that we hadn't really gotten to see on Dragon Gate USA shows yet, and it was working so well. The guys, as a cohesive nine-man unit, seem to really have the pacing and the structure of this match down. And then clearly, once UHA goes out, things fall apart to an extent because there's a guy that's supposed to be there that's not there. And it takes them, you know, it takes the crowd a long time to rebound, but it takes the wrestlers a minute, really too realistically, to kind of figure out what to do in this match, because things really come to a halt, and it's a real bummer. I should note, I thought Eric Cannon and I, you know, I don't know for sure, I've obviously never wrestled a match, but when UHA takes that nasty spill to the outside, it looked like Eric Cannon did a great job of protecting UHA and then making sure that the proper care was needed. So Cannon, the always professional guy that he is, that was a great job out of him there. But even with the slower second half, with this altered on-the-fly version of the second half of this main event, I still thought it was an excellent match. BB Hulk and Pinky Sanchez had good chemistry. I liked what they were doing. And then the final spots with Gargano and Tozawa, we're going to get a lot of that going forward, and it is always going to deliver.
Yeah, it's something where everything was flowing really well. And that was the thing, is as much as I detested that DUF promo, they fit in here really, really well. There was a funny moment pre-match where DUF, of course, has their beers. Dark Side Hulk has his bottle of wine. They're going kanpai, Eric Cannon and Hulk. And then they treat each other's drink, and they hate each other's drink. And then they spit it at each other and start the match, that I thought was just like a really like funny like little thing. It's like, of course those two would interact that way. I thought that was pretty true to character. Sami Callihan wearing tights is a weird, is always something to like wrap your head around. And it just like really looked, it was something where Callihan and Uha looked really great. And then they had like this really prolonged segment that when you look at this, like Matt Blanky are the true heels, even though the crowd loves Tozawa and Tozawa has that charm. And then you have DUF, which are more tweener leading heels. And then you have Ronins as like the sole faces. And there was a really prolonged but interesting, basically, 6-on-1 segment of everyone getting a lot of heat on Johnny Gargano that I thought was really solid as well. And the one thing that you didn't mention is that Akira Tozawa found the right way to get the crowd back into it. You know what that was, Case?
What's that?
Just being his weird self. Because he was doing things.
Go ahead.
Because he did the thing of he was shouting at Gargano, and then he suddenly kissed him and then went back in, and the crowd popped, and then everyone was back into the match. It's Akira Tozawa's bizarre connection to American fans that ultimately pulled through on this day.
I was just about to mention that Akira Tozawa was so over on this show. I mean, he is the star of this show more so than Pac, more so than Gargano, more so than Loki. You get the real impression that people are here for Akira Tozawa more so than anybody else. And it is just a very fascinating thing to watch, given how maybe a Doi or a Yoshino or a Mochizuki never totally assimilated to the American audience. Tozawa did, and Tozawa was just, again, the most over guy on the show and the most over guy on pretty much every show he's on going forward.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something where, I mean, we just talked about what happened PAX State around. I still wonder why this time they didn't put the title on Tozawa. Never holds the Freedom Gate title. It seems like that would have been like the perfect thing for him because of how connected and over it is. The finish came at the right time. It is the thing that's a little bit awkward in this, that you essentially have 2-on-3-on-3 and then the two dominate and win. But I mean, like, I guess like they were like Matt Blanky's going over on this show leading up until the Mania week, and we need to make them dominant and clean. It kind of like, and this is me saying this as a huge Hulk and Akira fan, kind of makes both Ronin and DUF look weak in a way.
Yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily a spot. I don't know who has the agency to maybe change that finish on the fly. The thing is that it is Hulk and Akira, and if any two guys are going to run roughshod over another six guys at this point in time in Dragon Gate, it is Hulk and Tozawa. So
it makes sense.
It makes sense. It's a strange finish, but it does make sense.
It's a strange finish. Didn't make sense, of course. Of course, Tozawa getting a win on Gargano will be something that'll be revisited a lot in DGUSA. So then both Gargano and Yoshino lose leading into their match. Tozawa grabs a microphone in the post-match and just basically shouts out that it's all bullshit and drops the microphone. Johnny Gargano looks at the microphone, but instead is too frustrated and he lets it go and walks. He shakes his head and walks to the back and leaves. And that is where we go black. So weird show, weird finish to a weird show.
I liked the show. It's one of those things that, and I think a lot of indie companies actually find themselves in this predicament where I think the show was necessary. Now, if you ask Gabe Sapolsky, he loses UHA Nation for a year. He loses Shiba for the weekend. And it's not a glowing debut for Samurai Del Sol. I think if he had to do it over again, this show would not exist. But it's almost like this house show feel to it. I think sometimes companies need that. And I ended up going 4 stars in the main event. So I got one spreadsheet match in there. I liked Pac versus Fox a lot. And I liked Ricochet versus my man Mike Cruz a lot. So there was enough on this show that's redeeming. Now, telling somebody, you know, 4 months after the show happens, hey, buy the show on DVD for $14.99 or $19.99, however much it cost for a DVD at the time, that's a bit of a different argument, because, again, the show was not on iPay-per-view. But watching it, you know, with 8 years of hindsight and just kind of having this show that really does feel different than most Dragon Gate USA shows, I really enjoyed it. I liked this show for what it was.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Like, it did feel like the build-up show, and it felt like it was necessary for Mania Weekend, so I'll give that all the credit in the world for that, because I feel like that was executed very well. It felt like, okay, we're building up our big matchup that's going to be happening tomorrow in a couple nights, and there'll be stuff on the next show that does another solid job of building that up as well.
You know, I feel like there's something to be said for the simplicity of Gabe's booking on this show, or Open the Southern Gate, or Chasing the Dragon. And, you know, it took us months and months to get through 2011, but the primary takeaways watching Southern Gate and Chasing the Dragon were like, hey, those shows were really fun. Like, that was different, but those shows really worked. Whereas, and I think we'll see it, you know, on these next two shows where all eyes are on Dragon Gate USA, biggest weekend, and Gabe wants to go big with some angle. And as we saw, it just so rarely, he rarely ever stuck the landing when he went for something big and headline-grabbing worthy. Whereas a show like Heat or Open the Southern Gate or Chasing the Dragon, he kind of just has, you know, these undercards that are a hodgepodge of a number of different things, and then a true-to-form Dragon Gate main event. There was the Mixed Partner Challenge at Southern Gate. It was part of the Stable Shootout, Mike. I know you remember the Stable Shootout. Chasing the Dragon was the Captain's Fall match. Here, it's the nine-man match. I like this version of Dragon Gate USA. It's really simple, and I'm guaranteed at least one good match out of it. Like, this is fine. And what we're going to see over these next 2 weeks, I've never seen the Miami shows, but looking at the cards, it looks like there's just going to be a lot of stuff that I don't really want to sit through. A lot of big-time pageantry in the Gabe Sapolsky universe that I'm just not into because it so rarely delivers. And I like Heat. I wish more shows felt like this.
Yeah, no, it's something where, at least for, like, with all those triple shots, I wish there was more of, like, this kind of stuff on the triple shot weekends. Like what we had with Southern Gate, like what we had with Chasing the Dragon, because this kind of stuff, like, it makes sense in a way, and it sets up things for the rest of the weekend. And I feel like that's something that was direly missed in 2011.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, Mike, I believe that is everything we've got. Are you ready to hear the Open the Ultimate Gate 2012 card?
Yes, I am.
This is from your neck of the woods, Miami Beach, Florida, March 30th, 2012. We should have a special guest for this show next week with a card that features Rich Swann versus AR Fox, Bobby Fish, and Tommy Dreamer, God help us all, versus The Scene, BB Hulk versus Sami Callihan, John Davis and Sabu versus Eric Cannon and Pinky Sanchez, Masaki Mochizuki versus Akira Tozawa, Johnny Vandal of the Florida indie scene versus Samurai Del Sol, Loki versus Pac, and the Open the United Gate title match, Chuck Taylor and Johnny Gargano versus Masato Yoshino and Ricochet. Obviously, this is not the initial card that was booked. We will get into all of the injuries and all of the drama that unfolded at the start of the show next week.
Yes, we will. We're getting into this is the set of shows that I've seen in person, and I've not watched really since that, other than rewatching Tozawa versus Mochizuki. I've watched that match recently. So I'm looking forward to getting to the show. This is an interesting Mania weekend, as we mentioned earlier. There's a lot of stuff to talk about in the lead up to this show, and we should have a special guest for that. So unless you got anything else, Case, I think we're out of here.
I think that's it.
All right, so you can follow us on Twitter at OpenVoiceGate. You can follow Case at _InYourCase, and I'm at Fujihaya with two eyes like Don Fuji. So for Case, I'm Mike, and we'll catch you next time on Open the Voice Gate, Rewind and Rewatch.